Welcome to the Key Wealth Matters weekly podcast, where we casually ramble on about important topics, including the markets, the economy, human ingenuity, and almost anything under the sun, giving you the keys to open doors in the world of investing. Today is Friday, April 26, 2024. I'm Brian Pietrangelo, and welcome to the podcast. Yesterday kicked off the NFL draft, where promising athletes got news that their hard work and dedication may give them a chance to make football a career. My advice to any of you fortunate enough to make it to the NFL would be to engage with a financial advisor to help you plan for the future. With that, I'd like to introduce our panel of experts. Some might say they are top draft picks in the world of investing. Here to share their insights on this week's market activity and more, George Mateo, Chief Investment Officer, Rajiv Sharma, Head of Fixed Income, and Adhir Bajwa, Director of Multi-Strategy Research. As a reminder, a lot of great content is available on key.com/wealthinsights, including updates from our Wealth Institute on many different subjects, and especially our Key Questions article series, addressing a relevant topic for investors each week. In addition, if you have any questions or need more information, please reach out to your financial advisor. Taking a look at this week's economic releases, we have two pretty major reports to share with you, one yesterday and one just this morning. So we'll start with yesterday's report on GDP. The advance estimate, or first estimate, for the first quarter of 2024 GDP came in at an annualized rate of 1.6%. This is down from the fourth quarter of 2023, which came in at 3.4%, and has been somewhat anticipated and forecasted, as many of you have heard when we on the podcast have talked about the economy being expected to slow. Within the report, the major contributor to GDP for the quarter was in fact consumer spending, which kept up a decent pace at 1.68 of a contribution factor to the overall 1.6% of GDP. Inventories were slightly up. Net exports or imports gave a negative read into the GDP calculation, and government spending was an uptick in modest increase in spending overall. You add up all those numbers and you get to the 1.6% annualized increase on the quarter for the first quarter of 2024. We'll get our panel's reaction to GDP, how it influences the economy, and how it will influence the Fed. And second, today's release of personal outlays and consumer spending also gives us a finer read on the month-over-month activity with regard to consumer spending and also consumer spending inflation, otherwise known as personal consumption expenditures inflation, which is really important because it's one of the main factors that the Federal Reserve's policy, the FOMC meeting, look at in terms of deciding what to do with inflation as it relates to government spending and consumer spending when they decide on their policy for interest rates. Overall, consumer spending for the month of March remained positive over February at a 0.8% increase. But more importantly than that, we look at the inflation, and that is the inflation on the consumer spending, which shows that overall PCE inflation in March was up 2.7%, which was higher than February, higher than January, which is not good news because it means that inflation continues to be sticky. If we exclude in food and energy, which is called core PCE inflation, it came in at 2%, 2.8% actually, in March, which was the same as February and slightly lower than January. So in conclusion on inflation, we talk about the stickiness of it, the last mile where inflation has significantly receded from where it was a year and 15 months ago, but now we continue to get this stagnation in inflation reduction, which means that it's not going down as much as the Fed would prefer in order to showcase the fact that higher interest rates are in fact slowing the economy from an inflationary perspective. So again, the Fed meets next week for their two-day meeting, encapsulating the press conference with Jay Powell on Wednesday. We'll get our read from Rajiv on this as well as George. So George, let's start with you and get your reaction to the overall growth data in GDP as well as the inflation data from PCE. George, what are your thoughts?
So Brian, I think our listeners should recognize the fact that economic data is pretty fluid and sometimes it's messy and oftentimes it gets revised time and time again until we really kind of know what the true trends are. And I think this week's data was no exception. I think to some extent, when numbers came out yesterday morning around GDP, and GDP itself is kind of a quirky measure. It's always backward looking, and it's always subject to a lot of revisions too. So it might be some time till we really kind of know the true strength of the overall economy. But nonetheless, it is what it is, and it's kind of the numbers we got. And if you look at the first kind of blush headline number, it suggested that the economy slowed in the most recent quarter. to a pretty anemic pace at about 1.5%, a little bit more than that, but not much more than that. That said, if you kind of peel back the onion a little bit and you look at some of the numbers behind the numbers, I think the overall story around economic strength is continuing. Spending, consumer spending, which is really the lion's share of the economy, consumer spending still represents, you know, north of 2/3 of the overall economic story. And that grew at about a 2.5% annual rate. So 2.5% is pretty good growth. And capital spending, all the stuff we're hearing about infrastructure, focus on semiconductor manufacturing and other parts of the economy, rose almost 3%, which also is still pretty healthy. So I guess another way to say that there were some quirky numbers with respect to trade data and inventories, which can get counted in odd kind of ways. Trade, I think, essentially is also pretty strong, even though it looked weak, but you know, really it was a reflection of the fact that imports, the things that we buy from other countries, was also pretty strong. And exports were not quite as strong. So I think that was the reason why the overall number was kind of weak, the headline number, but still consumer spending, capital spending were all pretty strong. You put that together with today's latest inflation numbers, and also I think the numbers are probably not as bad as feared. So yesterday we also got some other inflation numbers, which I, you know, think we can kind of parse out as well to say that those numbers were also pretty strong. And I think the overall tenor of the market yesterday was kind of focused on this notion around stagflation, meaning slower growth and higher inflation. But again, I think the growth is still there. So I think it's probably, I think we can kind of take the stag part out of the stagflation discussion for a moment and really focus more on inflation. And there the numbers this morning suggest that inflation is still somewhat of a problem. The good news, I guess, if there is good news, is that some of the numbers with respect to inflation were revised higher from the prior months. So again, this notion around revisions and kind of maybe the obfuscation around some of these numbers get a little bit muddy because numbers get revised time and time again. But March numbers were kind of, I guess, maybe not as bad as feared, still pretty high. So we're not really kind of seeing much improvement in the inflation numbers. But most of the revisions, again, for the inflation numbers were kind of back-end loaded, meaning they were more focused on January as opposed to February. And then we'll see what March numbers look like going forward. But I think the Fed has to acknowledge the fact that the confidence that they were looking for to cut rates this year, I think, has been killed. So I don't think they're going to be able to cut rates anytime soon. I don't think a hike is in the cards, but absence like a real slowdown in the economy, I think the overall picture remains the fact that employment situation is pretty strong. The labor market is therefore also pretty good. Consumers are seeing wages pick up a little bit, which also is fueling spending. And of course, we have this ongoing stimulus from the fiscal sector, namely the U.S. government, which is providing more spending and also more dollars to the economy. So I suspect, Rajiv, when the Fed gets together next week, they're going to have a hard time recognizing that the fact that often said, you know, cuts get kind of taken off. And maybe this is one of those meetings where they have to kind of walk back their forecasts again, with respect to rate cuts. What do you think?
Well, George, with core inflation trending higher, as you pointed out, it's stubborn inflation. And that price growth remains above the Fed's inflation target. That keeps the Fed from cutting rates in the near term, as you mentioned. It in turn keeps short-term bond yields higher, towards that 5% number in the front end. The Fed looks really closely at this data. They look closely at personal consumption data, and it shows that inflation, spending, these are both above expectations. You've seen it in the reaction in the bond market. You saw that a lot of this was already priced in because we've seen some stubborn inflation reports come out recently. We do have that FOMC meeting next week where the Fed's going to come out and speak to investors and speak to all of us. And I think with the latest data, you could anticipate a somewhat more hawkish Fed statement, a hawkish press conference as well. I would anticipate that Fed Chair Powell will say that we have stubborn inflation to deal with. Growth is still where it should be, so there's not a problem there, but he's really going to focus on the inflation report, and he's going to kind of signal that we need to keep rates higher for longer. And they may even signal that maybe we only get one rate cut this year, if any. So these are all impacting the market. And they continue to impact the market, especially in the front end of the yield curve. If we do not see inflation move towards the 2% goal that the Fed has set for themselves, that'll keep the Fed on hold indefinitely. And that reality has hit the market expectations of rate cuts for 2024. Currently, the market is pricing in only about a 10% probability of Fed rate cuts for the June meeting. For the July meeting, the probability is about 24%. So these probabilities have really shifted lower. And all eyes really are now on the September FOMC meeting, which still only has a 40% probability of rate cut at that meeting. And then you get very close to the election cycle, so the election day. So I think that's going to be something also that the Fed's going to have to keep in mind. We've seen other pressures in the yield curve right now. We've got a lot of treasury supply that has come to market through treasury auctions. And we've seen investor demanding higher yields for these to participate in these auctions. We've seen auctions across the curve, 2-year, 10-year, 30-year. All of these auctions have really demanded higher yields from for investors to participate. And that's also keeping yields higher for longer right now. And with yields where they are and a yield curve that remains inverted, investors are still focused on investing in the front end of the yield curve. You've got a 2-year treasury note, right? Treasury note yield is getting you close to 5% right now. We'll probably hit that 5% number pretty soon. There is really very little advantage to extend duration in this environment and go further out the curve. Right now, you're getting all the yield you need in the front end of the curve. So in terms of rates and credit risk, investors continue to focus on the front end of the yield curve. And that's a place where I didn't think that many investors thought that we would be at this point in the year, especially when rate cuts were being anticipated for the second half of the year, starting in June. And we're just not seeing that based on the data that we're seeing recently. And I think that's going to keep the attention in the front end of the yield curve.
So we have the FOMC meeting next week, and we often talk a lot on podcasts about monetary policy, interest rates, and how they affect the stock and bond markets. And thanks, Rajiv, for your update that you just gave us. So when we usually talk about bond markets with Rajiv, we're talking about the public markets like treasuries and corporate bonds. We have Adir Bajwa with us today on the podcast to talk more about an additional area of fixed income known as the private fixed income markets and or private credit. Adir, welcome. And why don't you share with us, what is investing in private credit and how does it differ from public markets?
Thank you, Brian. So larger organizations typically raise debt through public markets by issuing bonds that are traded on public markets. Smaller, privately held organizations who cannot access public debt markets generally borrow either from a bank or increasingly through private credit. Private credit refers to lending and borrowing activities that take place outside of traditional lending systems by alternative lenders such as dedicated private capital firms, hedge funds, and syndicated organizations. These organizations provide financing to borrowers who may not have access to traditional bank loans or who are seeking alternative sources of funding. Private credit investments are typically structured as loans, while traditional bonds are debt securities that represent a creditor's claim against an issuer. Where public debt is actively traded either over the counter or on exchanges, private credit is typically negotiated by a single or small group of lenders who typically hold on to the debt during the loan's duration. Consequently, private credit investments are generally considered less liquid than traditional bonds since there's very limited secondary market for these kind of loans.
So why should investors be interested in private credit opportunities as part of their investment portfolio?
Good question, Brian. Private credit is generally floating rate in nature, and it includes significant covenants, which borrowers have to maintain. Consequently, there is a very close relationship between the debtors as well as the creditors. So private credit investments generally are not tied to public market volatility. So in case of spread increasing or interest rates moving up or down, there is very limited impact on the private credit market, as opposed to private credit, which can take a lot of the brunt of the issues that come up in the economy. So public debt issuers can generally go through periods and cycles where they have to step back from the market, whereas private credit, generally speaking, because you have access to capital, are always looking for alternative sources of funding, which can be very beneficial to lenders. The biggest benefit of investing within private credit space is really the premium you're getting over public markets. For example, public markets returns have been less than half that of private markets, and at the same time, your risk profile looks very interesting as your drawdowns are generally much shallower than you've seen on the public market side. So overall, we believe private credit offers significant diversification benefits over public markets, but then also overall significantly higher total return over the life of the investment.
That's great. So what's happening in the private credit markets right now as we talk today on Friday, and or what is something you're seeing in the private credit markets that would be valuable for our listeners?
So Brian, higher for longer has become a theme for this year, something that has been discussed on this podcast repeatedly. In the current high interest rate environment, potentially slowing economic growth, private credit offers investors a true alternative to traditional assets. While these macroeconomic conditions have been a headwind for traditional assets like stocks and bonds, in case of private credit, these same macroeconomic environment has been a favorable tailwind. Given the recent public market volatility and banks pulling back on lending, private credit has stepped up by offering transaction speed and certainty at a significant premium to public markets. Another change that we are observing in private markets is the increased use of covenants. So private credit managers have been able to add tough covenants on borrowers because this is the only game in town. So either you take it or leave it. Consequently, lenders have been able to add things like you must maintain a minimum level of interest rate coverage ratio. You need to seek permission before adding additional debt. There have been restrictions generally placed on executive compensation and also on the amount of dividends that can be paid out to borrowers. One last thing, Brian, on the private credit investing side, private credit markets, as listeners can ascertain, can be very opaque, complex, and difficult to understand. So it is very important that you target a gifted manager while investing in this space who has significant experience dealing with many different market conditions, have scale, have access to abundant resources, and can focus on high quality, low leverage.
That's great, Tyler. Appreciate the update. And if you're looking for more information from our team, Tyler authored a Key Questions article that you can find out on key.com. We're going to publish it today with more information that you can learn about private credit and the private credit markets. So thanks, Tyler, for the update. Well, thanks for the conversation today, George, Rajiv, and Tyler. We appreciate your insights. And thanks to our listeners for joining us today. Be sure to subscribe to the Key Wealth Matters podcast through your favorite podcast app. As always, past performance is no guarantee of future results, and we know your financial situation is personal to you. So reach out to your relationship manager, portfolio strategist, or financial advisor for more information, and we'll catch up with you next week to see how the world and the markets have changed and provide those keys to help you navigate your financial journey.
Key Wealth, Key Private Bank, Key Family Wealth, Key Bank Institutional Advisors, and Key Private Client are marketing names for Key Bank National Association, or Key Bank, and certain affiliates such as Key Investment Services LLC, or KISS, and Key Corp Insurance Agency USA Inc., or KIA. The Key Wealth Institute is comprised of financial professionals representing Key Bank and certain affiliates such as KISS and KIA. Any opinions, projections, or recommendations contained herein are subject to change without notice, are those of the individual authors, and may not necessarily represent the views of Key Bank or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. This material presented is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be an offer, recommendation, or solicitation to purchase or sell any security or product or to employ a specific investment strategy. KeyBank, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates, represent, warrant, or guarantee that this material is accurate, complete, or suitable for any purpose or any investor, and it should not be used as a basis for investment decisions. It is not to be relied upon or used in substitution for the exercise of independent judgment. It should not be construed as individual tax, legal, or financial advice. The summaries, prices, quotes, and or statistics contained herein have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but are not necessarily complete and cannot be guaranteed. They are provided for informational purposes only and are not intended to replace any confirmations or statements. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Investment products, brokerage, and investment advisory services are offered through KISS, member FINRA SIPC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Insurance products are offered through KIA. Insurance products offered through KIA are underwritten by, and the obligation of, insurance companies that are not affiliated with KeyBank. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal amount invested. There is no guarantee that investment objectives will be achieved. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Asset allocation and diversification do not guarantee returns or protect against losses. Investment and insurance products and services are not FDIC insured, not bank guaranteed, may lose value, not a deposit, and not insured by any federal or state government agency. This content is copyrighted by KeyCorp 2024.